Hey there, tax fans. Welcome to State Tax Talks with me, your host, Joe Tantillo. I'm a tax attorney at the Hodge and Russ Law Firm looking to explore the nuances of state and local tax law. Here on the show, our goal is to keep tax informative, simple, and fun. So if you're ready to talk tax, turn up the volume and dive into this episode of State Tax Talks. Welcome back, tax fans. This is part two of our episode on non-resident allocation and apportionment. I'm here with Chris Doyle and Drew Wright. And we're going to continue our discussion of non-resident allocation right now. Philosophical questions have been posed. Long-term policy hypotheticals have been posed. But let's talk about the reality of how things actually work right now. Because as fun as it is to speculate and, you know, put on our legislator hats, there is a reality of what happens today. So let's talk about allocating compensation, something that is applicable to a large majority of the working population. New York State, what are the rules, the basic rules for the allocation of compensation?
So basic rules are pretty simple. Reality, especially in our current environment, is quite different. But the basic rules are we allocate wage compensation based on where the employee works to earn it. And so generally speaking, it's a physical presence examination of work days, and then we do a fraction, right? We determine a number of work days in New York, a total number of work days. We apply that to wage compensation to determine how much of that wage is New York source wage. And I'm sure we'll get into some of the complexities that exist around various components of wage that look at different periods. But that's kind of the test, and at root, it's pretty simple. You know, the bigger and more complicated question and the one that is the focus of a great deal of my time right now is how do we deal with remote work and New York's convenience rule?
Right, right. So before we delve into remote work, let's start off with, you know, a work day. Johnny Taxpayer, you know, he's a worker and he wants to know that you say work day allocation, but so that's what, Monday through Friday, right? I work Monday through Friday, that's it. So I just got to think about those days.
Yeah, I mean, typically most folks work Mondays through Fridays, right? So when I'm talking to someone, I say, look, I'm going to assume you're working on Mondays through Fridays, right? Because that's what most people do. We're going to assume you're not working on weekends, on holidays. If you take a vacation, we're going to assume those are non-working days. Certainly, that's not always true, right? I mean, look, at root, we're supposed to be counting workdays. So if the employee is working, it counts as a workday, even if it's on a Saturday, even if it's on Thanksgiving. Of course, what, you know, New York auditors look at in terms of proof, in terms of auditing those days can be different. But I think that's a fair sort of starting presumption, right? I'm going to assume Mondays through Fridays, absent some holiday or vacation or working days. And I'm going to assume, you know, the other category of days, weekends and holidays, are non-working days.
Right. And hypothetically, it could be a benefit to have a larger number of work days, especially if I'm somebody who works inside and outside of the state. That, you know, denominator in the fraction being larger could be helpful to me in terms of how much tax that I end up paying.
Yep. Add non-New York workdays to the denominator, drive down the New York percentage.
So how many emails do I have to answer on a Saturday with clients? Is it one? If I answer one email from a client on a Saturday, is that a work day?
That's what I'm thinking. And like, do I have to save receipts of that one email I sent on, like, I sent one email Saturday and Sunday the entire year? Do I have to save all those in a special folder that says, like, if audited, produce these, you know?
Well, if you look to the audit guidelines as a source of authority, which I'm wont to do, they would tell you that sending one email is not enough, right? If I wake up on a Saturday morning, I get one urgent email and I spend 5 minutes responding to it, that probably doesn't make that Saturday a workday. If I sit down at my desk for an hour and respond to 20 or 30 emails, then it probably does, but there's not really, unfortunately, a bright line test in New York. So I generally just talk to people about exercising their very best judgment. If you feel like you're working that day, you should count it as a workday. If you don't and you do a one-off work email or a one-off five-minute phone conversation, it's probably best just not to count it as a workday.
I'd like to litigate the stress of a single email and how stressful an email equates to whether something is a workday. Like if I'm just laboring over this one email, even if it's one line, but like for me, it's a big deal. You know, well, yeah, I want to argue that in front of a judge.
You talk about proof, right? What do you have to offer to prove that you're working? I mean, geez, I could be really laboring over one email. And if I'm working from home and I've remote accessed into my computer, and I can prove, geez, I was logged in 8 hours that day. You only sent one email, Drew, but I worked 8 hours on it. It was a labor. So, you could certainly see that kind of issue coming up. And I think that's how you go about proving it, right? How are you going to show that there's only one email or one phone call? How are you going to show you were working all day, right? You got calendars, you got remote access logs, you're doing these things from home. You have to think about that stuff if you're a non-resident who's going to be confronted by one of these audits.
I'm at an age where my doctors ask me from time to time to take my blood pressure. And I think that should be the test.
Yeah.
If your blood pressure gets over, 90 over 180 or something, that's a work day.
Yeah.
I'll send you a home blood pressure monitor from
Amazon. I've got one.
Yeah, because I think the whole concept of proving a work day in that sense where it gets a little bit more subjective, if it it is on a major holiday or on a weekend, it becomes a little bit arbitrary. And, when the taxpayer has the burden to prove it and something that's based on subjective, I guess to an extent, there are objective things that create a work day. But if we start talking about, how laborious it was, it can get a little bit more complicated. So basically, those of you who have high stress jobs, just, figure out a way to track your stress in case this becomes an issue for you at some point in the future.
Well, but it's a good question, right? And I think it speaks to the larger sort of subjectivity of a lot of these questions, right? Because what a work day looks like for one person is going to vary wildly from what it looks like for another person. And I mean, I've had the conversation a lot of times with folks who say, I work 365 days a year. And I get it, right? Some of the folks we talk to, they're really highly compensated people working important and high-stress jobs, and they probably in reality do work something close to 365 days a year. But practically speaking, right, how do you prove that? And what benefit is it? And a lot of times I'm talking to clients about, to your question a few minutes ago, is having a 300-day denominator going to give you a different answer than having a 240-day denominator? And if not, just do 240, right?
Sure.
Because we know in an audit that a denominator that's in that range, 230 to 250, accounts for weekends and holidays, and auditors typically feel comfortable with that. And if you put a 300 or a 350-day denominator, you start to get a lot more questions.
Yeah, and I guess the vagueness can cut both ways, right? Like, it's all well and good if you're one of those people who are working inside and outside of New York State and trying to boost your Florida work days to get a bigger denominator. But if you're someone who's got a high number of New York work days, now all of a sudden one email counts as a work day, it starts creating more trouble for you and that numerator gets larger.
Yep, for sure.
The beauty of ambiguity in our profession. So proving the work day is one thing, but proving location is a whole nother matter, right? And we get this type of question all the time as well. How do I prove that not only that I worked, but how do I prove where I was? And of course, people forget that we're just constantly tracked.
Yeah. Well, and they're two separate questions, right? The latter, I think, is easier. Proving where you're physically located anymore is not a difficult proposition, right? Everyone's carrying around a cell phone, and you're being tracked whether you know it or not. And generally speaking, that data is very available, right? So if I need to figure out where someone's physically located, I'm going to do it through their cell phone. I'm going to do it through their credit cards. I'm going to do it through their travel records. And anymore, it's pretty easy to determine where someone is physically located on every single day. Then the question becomes, are you working, right? And that's a different question to answer, because where I'm working, regardless of where I'm physically located, it's a different question. And it involves different records, right? So I'm going to look at things like calendars, right? If I keep an electronic calendar or handwritten calendar that has my work stuff on it, if I'm working, ideally that shows I'm working. If I'm traveling for work, if I'm an employee, I'm probably expensing the travel related expenditures. My expense reports are going to show I'm traveling. If I'm working from home and I remote in, right, got remote access records that are going to show I'm working. So there's kind of a whole host of secondary sources of records that can get at the question of, is someone working? When I'm talking to someone on the front end of these things, I always tell them, keep a detailed calendar, right? If you want to be able to support which days you're working and which days you're not, the very sort of best and first source of documentation in an audit is going to be the calendar, and you do yourself a ton of favors by keeping a really detailed calendar that kind of makes all this explicit.
12 o'clock, meeting. 12:30, snack break. Isn't it just like a group of lawyers to tell people to just keep every record of everything you did for, you know, every minute of every day?
Civil lawyers.
Yes.
Tax lawyers. Criminal lawyers, maybe not so much.
Yeah, there could be some trouble on that end. So let's talk about pivoting only slightly, telecommuting nexus. You know, if I am telecommuting into a state, can they tax me?
I would defer to Mr. Doyle, but physical presence is generally the test, right? So when I'm talking to companies and entities and they're trying to determine whether they have nexus in a state, I would almost always tell them that the physical presence of their employees performing services in the state is a nexus-creating event.
And from a business standpoint, the Due Process Clause has recently been construed to permit a state to tax you without physical presence, the Wayfair case back in 2018, where the Supreme Court said, no, we're not going to follow the old Interstate Commerce Clause physical presence rule because we don't believe in the dormant Interstate Commerce Clause anymore. And we're going to just rely on the due process fundamental fairness provision. And if you are purposefully exploiting a marketplace in a state, that's going to be enough as long as you satisfy a few requirements. And one is a de minimis requirement. So if you've got, you know, less than 200 transactions in a state and less than $100,000 worth of receipts from a state, then it's probably inappropriate for the state to tax you, at least according to the current Supreme Court jurisprudence. But if you've got more than that and, you know, you do almost anything to encourage that business activity, I think the Supreme Court would say, sure, a state can tax you. And the telecommuting, they've come up with this whole convenience rule theory that allows a state to tax a person that's not around. And I think Drew's going to talk more about that.
Yeah, because I think that's where it gets really interesting and is currently on the minds of auditors as well as taxpayers, or should be on the minds of taxpayers if you're not thinking about it. It's this issue of, okay, I will purposefully enter a jurisdiction and they can tax me, but also I have states like New York with this convenience rule, which say I am purposefully availing myself or exploiting that jurisdiction as well, even without physical presence. And now you get into this whole area of double taxation concern, which is like the ultimate fear of every resident of the United States is, oh my God, not only are you going to tax me, you're going to tax me again? That's outrageous.
It is. It's outrageous. Well, look, I mean, in my world, it's kind of all I've been thinking about for the last year and a half is what are the impacts of this convenience rule in a, you know, now largely remote sort of workforce. So I guess first it's probably helpful to say what the convenience rule is, right? The convenience rule is an allocation rule that deals with wage income. So if I'm an employee earning a wage and I'm based out of a New York office of my company and I work from my home outside of New York for my own convenience, those days that I'm physically not in New York but performing services at home in a state like, say, Florida, New York comes in and says, we're going to count those days that you're physically working from your home in Florida as New York work days when we do that wage allocation fraction we talked about a minute ago. That is the convenience rule. And look, pre-2020, it was pretty simple, right? We certainly dealt with folks who worked remotely on occasion. It's become an increasingly big deal over the last 2 years.
So just to restate what's already been stated, but just to put it in a vacuum, you can be a non-resident of the state of New York, not physically working in the state, and New York is still going to reach its arm over to wherever you are and take its piece.
Drag out those tax dollars.
Yeah.
That's right.
So, I mean, it's very easy to understand why this frustrates people and why conceptually people don't always think about it. They think, oh, I'm just going to move. I'm just going to, especially now, right? How many people are like, oh, I left. You hear it all the time. Oh, I left the state. What do you mean I still have to pay tax on my wage income? I'm working at home. I'm working at home in Florida. And yet New York has this rule that allows it to take a piece of that income because of this idea of sourcing and their own sourcing rules and fairness. And I think this is where we could get into a little bit of a fun conversation of, you know, how fair is the convenience rule, which is conceptually based on fairness and sourcing? I mean,
yeah, well, that becomes the exciting kind of theoretical question, right? Because certainly after COVID hit in 2020, a lot of people started working from home and geez, they didn't think it was particularly convenient, right? They weren't exercising a choice. They were being told this is what you have to do, right? We saw tons of it. Companies, closed offices, especially companies in the metro area, and just required their employees to begin working remotely. And so certainly as you think about, kind of the underlying basis for the convenience rule, those are the kinds of issues that are coming up in these audits, right? Audits of 2020 and 2021 tax years. Was it really for the employees' convenience, or geez, were these days work from home at the necessity of the employer at that point?
I think conceptually, it's easier to wrap our heads around the idea of, a business may not physically have a store in a state, but they can generate receipts from that state and they're transacting business. And so, of course, yeah, we're going to tax them to some extent on the income that they generate from there. But it gets a little bit murkier for me personally. Not that I can't understand the position, but a little bit murkier when you say, okay, well, you are employed by a business in New York City. That's where their headquarters are and that's where your office assignment is. But, maybe you only go there twice a year, three times a year, and the rest of the time you're working elsewhere, Texas or Tennessee or Florida or one of these many states that aren't so aggressive on state income tax. And the idea that you are availing yourself of that market, that you are benefiting from that market outside of what is, for me, the thing that always pops up in all of the cases that have dealt with this is, oh, well, look, you're being paid a New York City salary and you're getting that benefit of the market. Therefore, it is fair to tax your wages. But, you're not using schools or hospitals or ambulance services or even driving on the roads to a certain extent. And so I think that idea of fairness for me personally starts to crumble a little bit.
So let me reconcile it for you. And I haven't thought about it this way until this conversation. But if you think about the Wayfair purposeful exploitation of the market for a business to create nexus to allow a state to tax the business, think about where is the market for your labor? And it's where your employer is located. And if you are purposefully from outside of the state exploiting an in-state market where your labor is or where your employer is located for the purpose of selling your labor, then it's as appropriate for a state to say it's where your employer is as it is for a state to tell a business it's where your market is. That is how you could reconcile it. That's not saying I agree with it at all.
Sure.
I disagree with it entirely.
Yes.
And by the way, there's only a few states that have a convenience rule, right? It's New York and then right? And then there's three
Nebraska.
Other states. I heard Nebraska changed its law to get rid of the—
They might have.
I think that they actually made a statutory
change.
There were
six. I think there are currently five.
Right.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. I can wrap my head around that. I tend to approach the issue more from the idea of like fairness to the individual as opposed to thinking about like the business consequences of entering a marketplace and, the benefit of services received, et cetera. But I do think it's easier to understand the other side's position when you think about it in the way that you just posited.
That's why we need Chris, Joe.
he is the professor of the group, which is extremely beneficial
for
situations like this.
I had my professorial gummies before I attended this.
So this telecommuting issue, we've mentioned it before, but the audits around it are rampant right now. And New York is looking at it under a microscope. But it seems like for many taxpayers, it's like it's a hindsight issue. It's kind of like, oh, I moved, but I didn't think about this.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the nature of audit, right? People, for the telecommuting issue, people left New York in March of 2020 when COVID hit. A lot of them went to other states. A lot of them subsequently changed their residence. A lot of them did so in ways that, you know, are super compelling from a residency standpoint. But not a lot of them thought in real time about the nature and source of their wage income that they were now earning by working remotely from some other state. And so certainly in the audits we have seen so far of 2020 tax years, right, New York has sent out a bunch of audit letters to 2020 filers on the telecommuting issue. It is common for me to field one of those and talk to the person and for them to just tell me, yeah, I was working remotely from home and otherwise nothing, you know, other than COVID hit and it changed everyone's world, nothing changed in my facts and circumstances to cause me to work from home. And so it has been a kind of trying to figure out in hindsight how to sort of navigate those cases and try to, you know, get to the best tax result.
Yeah, but there are ways around it. You know, it's not like you just need to quit your job. That's not the solution.
Yeah, I mean, certainly going forward, right? The second I talk to someone, if they haven't done anything, I'm absolutely talking about what changes we can make so that going forward, we sort of mitigate the impacts of this convenience rule. And I generally think about it as sort of three options here. The first and best option is if I work for a company that has an office in some other state, some non-New York state, can I be assigned to that office instead, right? And certainly we've talked to a lot of people post-COVID who, you know, companies who had lots of employees move, high-level employees moving to, you know, certain parts of the states, ding, ding, Florida. And a lot of companies have opened an office in another state post-COVID. And so if there's an office of the company in close proximity to my new home, getting reassigned to that office is the best and simplest way to mitigate this convenience issue. I'm no longer an employee based in a New York office of my company. That's not an option for a lot of people, right? They moved and their company does not have an office in whatever state they live in or an office that is convenient to their home. And so the second option I talk to folks about is the exception to the convenience rule, which is the bona fide home office exception. And effectively, if I can take some steps, jump through some hoops to make my home office what's called a bona fide home office, I get to treat the days I work from home as if I was working in just any other office of the company. It's an exceedingly difficult test to meet. I think the technical memorandum that announced the policy is now 16 years old.
Yeah, 2006, and I think.
A lot of the factors that are laid out there, some of them are just no longer relevant. Some of them are certainly not relevant to employees of service providers in a 2022 world. And so it's generally not my preference. And I think prior to 2020, I had never advised a single person on trying to use the bona fide home office exception. And we've probably done that a couple hundred times over the last few years. So it's an option that's out there. And for some folks, it's the only option. And then the third option is if I'm going to just be a remote worker, period, full stop, right? If I used to work in New York, but now I moved to Florida and my company says, you can work remotely 100% of your time. You never need to come to New York. You never need to be in an office of the company. There's a case law exception for remote workers, right? But it has to be 100%, right? There's no kind of de minimis threshold. If I'm only in the office 5 days, can I still qualify for that remote exception? Probably not.
Right. So all is not lost to those out there listening, fearing that the convenience rule is creeping slowly toward them to reach its long arms into their pocket and take their wallet.
Yes, all is not lost, but the sooner you have that conversation, the better, because, you know, you can't really unring the bell for some of this stuff, right?
So call your friendly tax attorneys at Hodgson Russ and come up with a plan to save yourself some money.
Right.
All right. Folks, we're going to take another pause here. This is an excellent conversation, and it simply requires more discussion in another episode. So we'll pick it up with part three next time. Thanks for joining us for another episode of State Tax Talks. If you're interested in listening to more episodes, we're available on all platforms where podcasts can be found, including YouTube. If you enjoyed this episode of State Tax Talks with Joe Tantillo, please give us a 5-star review on your favorite podcast platform. And if you're in need of a tax professional,
you can contact the tax attorneys at Hodgson Russ. Go to www.hodgsonruss.com for more information. And until next time, I'm Joe Tantillo, and this is State Tax Talks. Catch you later, tax fans.